Hey, it's Paul Bandis with GreatDad.com, and I'm here again with my weekly series talking to other dads and other dad experts about what works in parenting, what are the challenges, how does it work, how to bring fulfillment. And I've got a kind of a different guest than the usual guests I have. Angelo Valenti is with me today, who's going to talk a little bit about his experience in the business world, coaching people, but also how to find joy and how to find excitement, how to make your life more meaningful without really working at it too hard. So welcome, Angelo.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I just love your experience. You worked for 40 years as a consultant and coach. You've got business experience, but probably through a lot of that, you've heard a lot of stories from people of all ages about their lack of having fun in their lives, their lack of, you know, being able to enjoy themselves. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I've seen in a lot of people is that they're doing what they're doing now with the idea that they're going to enjoy life later at some future time. And they don't realize that nobody's guaranteed a future time.
Yeah.
You've got to enjoy life every day right now. And whether it's being a good husband, father, parent, you have to take that seriously right now, or it's going to be gone before you know it. And when you get to the point, it's like, people say, well, when I retire, I'll travel. There's no guarantee you're going to be around to travel. So if you have a chance to have an experience, or if you have a chance to just enjoy the simple things in life, taking a walk, petting a puppy, just doing simple things that can give you pleasure, you need to do them now. You don't need to wait for later.
Yeah. So we hear a lot about that, but what do you think is the reason most people don't take that advice to heart, or that they don't incorporate it, or they can't see past the platitude or the good advice part of that and actually do it?
Well, I think a lot of the reason today is that people are so influenced by social media and other media and well-intentioned friends who are telling them what they should be doing.
Right.
And if you listen to what other people tell you should be doing, you end up with psychological diarrhea. That's where you should all over yourself. And instead of thinking about what others think you should be doing things that you know are going to give you pleasure. Not in the hedonistic sense of pleasure, but in the satisfaction, the contentment, the joy. I think it's important for everybody to find what gives them joy and do it every day.
And do you, working with your clients, do you have a process for how people can find what gives them joy versus what their wife tells them should give them joy? Like, my wife would love it if I found joy taking out the garbage, but that doesn't give me joy. So I found out.
Yeah. Well, there is a process, but it varies from person to person, because what gives one person joy doesn't necessarily give another person joy. So what I try to find with my clients is what gives them, that individual, joy. And it could be something. I'll give you an example. I was interviewing a gentleman and for a position, corporate position. And I always ask people what they like to do in their free time, because that's important. If you don't do something that's fun in your free time, like I said, the dog barking, you're going to be burned out at work. So I asked him, what do you like to do in your free time? And he said, I like to collect animal tracks. So I said, what does that mean? And he says, I go out in the woods and with a trowel and some plaster. And when I see an animal track that I don't have in my collection, I'll make a plaster cast of it and add it to my collection. So I said, well, how many animal tracks do you have? And he says, I've got over 100. And, like a dummy, I said, you mean there's 100 different animals running around in your woods where you live? He said, no, I've been all over the world looking for animal tracks.
Yeah.
So that's kind of unusual. I'd never heard that before, but it gave him such joy to find an animal track that he hadn't had in his collection. God bless him.
Yeah. What I love about that is he has You know, you and I would be like, are you kidding? That's the way you spend your afternoons.
Right.
But for him, that was valuable. And that what the great part about that is there's probably no place he can go to say, look at my collection of my 100+1. You've got a puny little one. Mine's better. You know, there's no monetary value. It's just, he's doing that just for his own.
Just for the sheer pleasure of it. But I'll bet you, this was several years ago, I'll bet you there is a Facebook group now for people who collect animal tracks.
Yeah. So let's bring this discussion then toward parenting and what you've learned about this process for parents. Because I have some points of view about the different ages of kids and where you can use your, you know, things that make you happy versus that time that comes when you have to kind of follow where, you know, and you have to nurture and then follow your kids in the things that make them happy.
Yeah, you do. Well, they say in football, you hear people say the best ability to have is availability. And I think that applies to parenthood as well. The most important thing you can do for your children is to be there. And I mean, actively be there. Ask them questions, listen to them, take an interest in what they're interested in. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You want to monitor them if they get interested in something they ought not to be interested in.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
also you can give them a sense that you actually care about what they're doing. You know, parenthood is a big responsibility. It's a big joy, but it's a big responsibility too. And I don't think enough people take that responsibility seriously today. The only reason to have kids is if you really want to have kids. I mean, that's the only reason.
Right.
And if you have those children, you have an obligation to make sure that they're taken care of, that their physical needs are taken care of, but also that you teach them how to be functioning citizens in our society.
Yeah.
The only way you do that is you have to teach them that there are boundaries. The most important thing you can teach a child is that behavior has consequences. They need to understand that what they do has an impact. And if they do something they maybe shouldn't do, the impact might not be something that they like, mm-hmm. but they need to learn. You know, good behavior leads to rewards, bad behavior leads to punishments in one form or another.
Mm-hmm. Whether those are really direct or whether that just...
Oh, they're direct or indirect.
Right.
It'd be karmic punishment at some later point, but.
So I love that part about that you give grace to dads, because I think that's a great thing to be able to say, if I have shown up both physically and with, you know, some direct focus on my kids every day, I've done 90% of the job, do you think? I mean, because within that is the questioning, is the monitoring, is the feeding, is the caring, all that stuff is kind of wrapped up into that whole idea of that time.
Sure. And young kids, especially 4, 5, 6, 7, they're going to ask more questions than you're going to ask. They're going to ask questions about everything. And it's important to give them legitimate answers. Just because I said so is not a good answer. Well, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
You got to explain the reasons. Here's what's likely to happen if you do that. And if you're prepared for that bad thing to happen, then go right ahead and do it. Unless it's going to hurt them, obviously. Go ahead and let them do it. Kids, you tell a little kid, don't touch the hot stove. What's the first thing they do? They touch the hot stove and they don't do it again because that's one trial learning. They get burned and then they don't do it again. But sometimes you just have to let them experience that. You can't shelter your children from every bad thing that might happen to them.
Yeah. Well, that's the flip side of the dad who's completely not in the picture. And then the one who's a complete helicopter parent is mortally afraid of any potential harm. And that's not doing them any favors.
Oh, it's not doing them any favors at all. And of course, I grew up in a different era than kids are today. When I was growing up in the summertime, when I was 8 or 9 years old, we'd get on our bikes and go to the playground.
Sure. Yeah,
and our parents would say, don't come home till the streetlights come on.
Yeah.
And we'd have a snack at Joe's house, or we'd have, you know, take a break at Sally's house or whatever it was. We felt safe And we learned how to interact with one another and learn how to solve problems. Yeah. If you're there at every turn for your child, they're never going to learn how to solve problems on their own. And I think it's a really valuable skill for children to learn how to solve problems. If you get in a conflict with somebody else, you can learn how to solve that conflict. Your kid's not always right. Maybe he's wrong in this particular situation. So it's important to teach them. And the best way for young kids to learn is to go through those experiences themselves.
Yeah, but it does get complicated. I mean,
it's more complicated now. You wouldn't let a 9-year-old kid go on his bicycle and go to the playground now by himself.
Though it probably, there's a good argument that it's less dangerous now than it was then. Because now we are aware that there are a lot of the problems that we would be worried about are problems that actually probably exist in the family or among people
yes.
that the child knows already, and that the streets aren't as dangerous as the news media would like you to
No, they're not. I mean, when I was a little kid, we'd play on metal playground
equipment. Yeah,
yeah. It's almost like torture devices now.
Yeah,
we'd,
right.
We'd skin our knees.
Yeah, rusty swing sets with concrete.
We'd bump our heads and everything, and we survived.
Yeah.
We would climb up on the roof and jump off and do all kinds of things that we would learn. Maybe I ought not to do that again. Or, gee, that was fun. Maybe I'll do it some more.
Yeah. Yeah. So the time that of that, definitely there is a switch I find with fatherhood is that, the infancy years are certainly different. But once the kids are between 3 and about 11, you are the instigator. And maybe this ties into this part about you finding joy. If you could find a way to spend more time with your kids while doing the things that you love, like the example of your contact there who collects the footprints, if he was out there every weekend with his child doing that, he'd be doing exactly what he loves, and the child would get that experience, whether they go on and do it themselves or not, that's another story, but they would be perfectly excited to be involved with dad for the afternoon.
Well, I was an athlete growing up, and when my kids were little, I was playing a lot of tennis. So I would take them with me to the tennis club, and when they were really young, they might sit and watch, and there were other kids around. When they got old enough, they learned how to play, and we played tennis together. And we, our day consisted of, on the weekend, we'd go to the tennis club, and once they learned how to play, they'd play with their friends, and I'd play with, the guys that I played with. And it became something that they really looked forward to, and both of them are, to this day, very good tennis players. Now, when my stepson came along, I raised him since he was 2. At that point, I was playing a lot of golf. So took him to the golf course with me. And he and I play in golf tournaments together now. We've won golf tournaments together. And it's something that we talk about. We've taken golf trips together. The point is that I didn't sacrifice the things that I like to do for my kids. I involved them and gave them the choice. I mean, they didn't have to enjoy tennis, but they did.
Yeah.
And they knew that if they wanted to spend time with dad, chances are the tennis court was a good place to do it. Right. And I would take them with me when I'd go shopping for clothes or whatever. When I went shopping for golf clubs or tennis stuff, they were always in the car with me. I took them with me, and they got a chance to interact with adults who weren't their parents. They got a chance to kind of listen to me talk to my friends, and they learned a lot from that experience, and it got to something they looked forward to.
Do you think a lot of men get all confused about this, that they think that to be a good dad, they have to do what somebody else says? You have to take them to the museum, or you have to take them to the symphony or something like that, versus just saying, today I want to go fishing or whatever, and just saying, that's what we're doing, and they're happy.
Yeah, I think that's better. I don't think you should force activities down a kid's throat And I think one of the problems today is I think we over-involve our children in activities, and then they never have a chance to be children. They're always, they're learning something, or they're going to a class, or they're in some kind of a competition, and they never get a chance to just be kids. So I think you can expose them to the museums and to music. And most little kids at some point are going to say, I want to learn how to play the guitar or the piano or something like that. Give them a chance. And for some kids, they're going to learn to love it. It's going to take, and they'll be musicians, or they'll be athletes, or they'll be readers. I really encourage every parent to read to their children when they're young.
Yeah.
One of the great gifts you can give a kid is to make that kid a lifelong reader.
Well, I could tell you from having done that with both my kids that it's not only a great gift to them, but it's a great gift to you. I mean, the memory I have with my son and daughter reading books, I mean, we'll both have for forever.
Oh, sure.
So you're a PhD psychologist, so you know a lot more about what the repercussions are. I think a lot of people think some of this is organic, or all you know, they're just bad cases out there. People, we certainly know people who we think are bad parents, and we know people who, from all outward appearances, look like they're good parents, and sometimes they have completely different outcomes. But maybe you know a little bit more than I do about what the statistics or what the evidence shows in terms of the chances are that you'll have good, reasoned, well-balanced, emotionally stable kids into the future if you've paid attention in the way we're talking.
Oh, I don't know the statistics, but I do know that children watch their parents continuously. So what you want to do is exhibit the kind of behavior that you want your children to exhibit. If in some homes, if the parents don't get along, kids aren't stupid. They can see that. And if they're arguing, or if there's physical violence, or drug abuse, or alcohol abuse, or some other kind of dysfunctional behavior in that family, those kids can see that. And what I've seen is, speaking about men usually in this case, if a child's father is an alcoholic, that child has seen what that's done to the family. Mm-hmm. And they're either going to go one of two ways. They're either going to be an alcoholic themselves, or they're going to be anti-drinking, a teetotaler, if you will, as a way of combating what they've seen when they were kids. I mean, you've got children are very observant, and they take to heart the things that you might make an offhand comment that hits them very at a very deep level that you don't even think about much.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to encourage children when they're doing something worthy, and discourage them when they're doing something that's not worthy.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to know boundaries. You need to teach your children boundaries. And I think in a lot of cases today, people just give in to their children, feel, oh, I can't control them.
Well, that's why, yeah, one area of problems, yeah, is the people who give in, and So, yeah, I think this all ties into what you're saying about it goes equally well for kids as it does for adults, is actions or inactions have consequences.
They do have consequences,
Yeah, so at the same time, I know that some of the things that you do, and maybe that is something we should touch on, is the fact that you inevitably will have arguments and fights with your partner in front of the kids. I mean, it's just part of living. And there are other things like that, that maybe in the moment, maybe in the moment or later on, you worry, oh, wow, would that have scarred them? But I know that it is important in terms of the arguments with your partner. If you have a good relationship, it's important for the child to see that afterwards, mommy and daddy were saying, you know, they were quite hot tempered and everything, but that hopefully they didn't say anything that was deeply hurtful and permanent, but that they also, that the kids also see mommy and daddy make up afterwards and everything that you take.
Yes.
But are there other situations like that where you think that there would be a potential for harm to the kids if you didn't address it or didn't fix it in front of them? where
well, I don't think fixing it is the answer. I do think discussing it is a good idea. And you say, Mommy and I had a disagreement about this and got a little loud, but we came to a resolution. We're okay. Everything's fine. And sometimes if you love somebody or you're in a relationship with somebody, you don't always agree on everything.
Right.
And maybe we didn't handle this disagreement the best way we could have, but we came, like I said, we came to a resolution. We're good. We love each other, but we just got a little loud on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you advise men who are not feeling totally into it? Maybe they shouldn't have been dads in the first place, or they don't have the bond with their child today. And I guess my warning is that if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to pay for the price later, as we just discussed. But how
at some point you might want to have a relationship with your son. Here's a great example. My first son was born in 1974. And at the same time my son was born, a song by Harry Chapin came out called Cats in the Cradle. And that's a song about a dad who was always too busy for his son. His son wanted to play catch. He didn't have time. His son wanted to do stuff with him, and the dad was working all the time. And when the son became an adult, what do you know? He didn't have time for his dad.
Yeah.
So that song hit me. I was only 25 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And I said,
I think it hit the whole generation. I mean,
right. I am not going to be that guy. Because my parents were very involved in my life. I had a great upbringing, and I wanted my kids to have a great upbringing. And I figured if my kid wants to play catch, by God, we're going to play catch.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a simple thing. Go out in the yard. If he wants to watch a movie with you, watch a movie with him. It's watching movies together is great. There's a lot of life lessons to be learned if you're watching the right movies.
I think you and I probably would love to see that every dad was motivated and would respond to that immediately. But there are guys who don't make the time, who say, you know, we'll do that tomorrow when I get a little more energy. And I hate to think of it as being like the idea just being like, if you don't do it, you're going to, you know, you have horrible kids, because that's not necessarily
true.
Kids can overcome that. But we were talking about a little bit before we got started about how important it is to create memories and create foundational points in the year or in your relationship to have those kids keep on coming back, so that you can have a relationship after everything else.
Well, you've got to realize if you're a dad, there's a part of you in that kid. Even with my stepson, I raised him just like I raised my other two boys, because he's my son. And it's the time that you spend and the involvement that you have. That's part of you. And you're going to see parts of yourself, good or bad, in that child. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, so if a dad doesn't want to be a dad, there's really not that much you can do about it. He's just neglecting the most important job there is to raise future generations.
Yeah.
But I think if those dads can learn to find the joy, something enjoyable about spending time with their kids, and that's asking them questions, doing things with them, finding out what they're interested in, if they're interested in, I don't even know what, but read about it, learn about it. If they want to play video games, learn how to play a video game with
them. Yeah.
I mean, there's things you can do, but it requires effort on your part. Being a parent requires effort. And if you're not willing to put in the effort, you're not going to get much of a good result out of it.
So, yeah. So maybe tying into your book, you've got a book that's called You're Making This Too Hard. It's a kind of a slim tome, but from what the reviews I've read, everybody really gets a lot out of that book. And I think one of the key concepts, and help me with this, is about taking control and actively enjoying life rather than expecting life to kind of come to you and fill you with enjoyment.
Right. Well, the full title of the book is You're Making This Way Too Hard, Find Your Easy Way to Enjoy Life. And it's really, a lot of it is applied common sense, but what you don't see a lot of today is common sense. It's kind of gone by the wayside. So I think that what I try to encourage people in the book is, first, you have to learn how to love yourself. I think a lot of dysfunctional behavior comes from people who don't love themselves. And loving yourself doesn't mean you're a narcissist and doesn't mean you're selfish. It means that you recognize that you have value, you have worth, and you really can't love somebody else if you don't love yourself first. And you can't expect somebody else to love you if you don't love yourself first. And part of self-love is self-care. You need to take care of yourself. If you want your kids to grow up to be healthy, they need to see you exercising, eating properly, not doing things that are going to damage your body. So that's an important, the self-care, take a walk, exercise, take a nap, get plenty of sleep, eat right. All the things that give your engine a chance to function as well as possible. That's part of it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, to enjoy life, I think you have to be able to interact with the world in a productive way. And that means be polite, be prompt, show gratitude, say thank you, say please, hold the door for people. Simple things that people don't seem to do as much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've been on an airplane where there was an incident, people yelling and screaming on an airplane because I don't know why, but they'll cause a disruption when that never would have happened
in
times past. I think common courtesy, respect for others, common decency, the way some people dress, you wouldn't see people dressed like that in times past, is less common than it was. And I think you see the end result of it. If people don't respect others, they devalue other people. And I think if you value yourself, you're more likely to value other people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother rabbit hole of how negativity can take over from common sense, and how you can be seduced into thinking that railing against everybody out walking around is, you know, the other person, they're all horrible and everything else. But I don't know if you have any good advice about how to keep, you know, keep on thinking positive.
Well, the best thing you can do in that regard is don't argue with idiots. I've got a section in my book about don't argue with idiots. And on the internet is designed for two things: to get you to buy stuff and to keep you arguing with one another.
Yeah.
And you don't have to fall into either of those traps. I mean, if you're arguing with somebody online about an issue, you're not going to change their mind. They're not going to change your mind. You don't even know that person.
Yeah.
And so we start to confuse social media with real life. And when you do that, you're really going down a rabbit hole, because there's a whole lot of fantasy, meaning not real, on social media. People are posting on social media what they want you to see, not or not.
Yeah.
So you have to be real careful. And I think when people get a million views for a video that they took of two people beating each other up, that encourages that behavior. Rather than stepping in and say, hey, don't beat each other up, they'll take a video of it. And you see this at crime scenes all the time, where people used to call the police or they used to take some kind of action to stop what was going on. Now they just take a video of it and post it on social media.
Yeah. Well, I just gave up cold turkey Twitter about 8 weeks ago. And, you know, I've been working in technology and the internet for almost 30 years. And I certainly was aware of how negative that is. And it took me a lot to just quit entirely, because quitting a little bit didn't help. But I think if everybody this week kind of thinks consciously about their internet usage and how they feel before and after, monitor a little bit about the negative effect it has on you and your heart rate and your emotional state, and think about whether you need to get rid of some of it that's doing the worst part of it. There are certainly parts of the internet, dog videos and everything, that can make you happy again. But
absolutely.
The constant negative stuff is killing us all.
It is. And I never got on Twitter. I have an account that I haven't, I've never posted one thing, just because I just didn't like the idea, the whole concept of it. You know, I have a Facebook account, I have an Instagram account, I have a LinkedIn account. The LinkedIn's for business. That's how I connect with my clients.
But all those platforms are a little, there's obviously some FOMO and everything else going on there, but they're a little bit more positive. I think Twitter is the biggest cesspool.
Yes.
But it seduces you into it, and it keeps keeps on making you come back, and part of it is the outrage factor. So everybody, think of, if you're on Twitter, get rid of it this week. I plead, I urge you.
It can't hurt. You're not going to die from lack of Twitter.
That's right. It has not changed my life at all. I have not missed out on one trend by getting off it. All right. Well, Angela, this is really interesting. I there's like a whole bunch of threads here you and I could have talked about for a long time, and I maybe we'll have to do it again sometime. You've got a coaching practice at angelovalenti.com. We'll put that in the show notes, so don't try to spell it out while you drive. And you're coming out with a course later on in the year that takes a lot of the lessons from the book, You're Making This Too Hard. There'll be a workbook and a course later on in the year.
Yep.
That's
my 2024 goal.
Well, that's good. Maybe we'll get together again once you get that all.
I'd like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any last words of advice for dads for this coming week?
The best advice is just be there for your kids.
Yeah.
Remember what I said earlier, the best ability is availability. So just be available.
That's a great mantra. I love mantras because they pop in your head at odd times, and you know, if you act on it every once in a while, that's a great thing. It's just, that's a memorable one. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Paul Banas with greatdad.com. Thanks a lot for joining. I have a course myself on gratitude that you can get at greatdad.com/gratitude. And if you put in the code podcast50, you get 50% off. And gratitude is really a key ingredient to finding joy, I find. And
what it's my book?
Free. It's free. If you can't afford the course, just let me know and I'll give it to you for free. I just really believe in the taking, remembering how beautiful the sky is, listening to a dog, whatever it is, and it'll make you a lot happier and get off Twitter. Okay. Thanks, Angelo.
Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Bye-bye.